to do something a little different for the program today. Here in the Pacific Northwest in Portland, Oregon, for one of the personal appearance campaigns, we're in the studios of KPTV, Channel 12. The Pacific Northwest is a part of the country that I have a special affinity for. I was born here, and I also grew up in Eugene, Oregon. Left there in about 1947 and have had very few opportunities to return. Here with me in the studio today are some gentlemen I'd like you to meet from city government and business in this area in Portland, Oregon. First, City Commissioner Frank Ivancy was with us. Dr. Edward Reed, who is Senior Vice President of the U.S. National Bank. Mr. Rick Myers, Executive Director of the Western Environmental Trade Association. And Mr. Ed Westerdahl, who is former Director of the Port of Portland. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being my guest today on this program. I want to talk about some of the problems that confront the United States of America and looking at the city of Portland for a moment as a microcosm of some of those problems. One of the recent events in the news that made everybody aware of Portland was the Mad Bomber incident, where the city appeared to be so vulnerable that somebody was threatening to rob, maybe it was your bank, Ed, I don't know, somebody's bank was supposed to come up with $1 million. In a threat to bomb some of your power plants, was that it, and to black it out. Frank, what was the story?
Well, this individual threatened the Bonneville Power Administration. He wanted to, in fact, did blow up some of the towers of Bonneville Power, and he put in quite a scare in this area as far as our power supply. And in a way, he cranked up a lot of concern amongst the citizens as far as meeting this problem. And I think in a positive sense, we gained a lot from that experience, but it shows you how delicate we are in our society as far as energy requirements and what could happen.
Well, was there a real threat that a massive blackout could occur from such an activity?
There was a real threat. In fact, he switched his threat to our water system, the Bull Run watershed, a fire threat. And thankfully, the rains came and that threat really didn't come off.
You know, this kind of takes us back to the days when some of the people who were demonstrating in our streets claimed that whole cities could be rendered ineffective by putting LSD in the water supply. And our big cities seem to be so technologically developed today that they're increasingly vulnerable to some act like this. And I'm sure that people all over, big cities all over the country, Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, must have reacted and scrambled around to try to find out how protected are they in such cases. But the person was apprehended, as I recall.
That's right. The FBI apprehended him, and we don't know what's going to happen as far as the final court determinations are concerned. But it shows you that, in a way, you can protect yourself up to a point, but beyond that, we have no protection. You have to rely on luck in some respects, but we got through this one very well.
Well, the energy crisis is a crisis. The word crisis is somewhat overworked, but a crisis now that is fading a lot of people's memory as a result of a lessening of the earlier shortages in oil. But nevertheless, we're still facing the possibility of increased price for fuel, of heavier taxation. Some people are urging the president to do this. Let's talk about the economy and energy as it relates to the Pacific Northwest and the city of Portland and its environs for a moment. What are your own specific problems here in the city of Portland vis-a-vis energy?
Well, I think one of the areas that we are very much concerned about is our natural gas supply. Most of our gas in the Northwest comes from Canada, and as you know, there's a shortfall situation as far as Canadian gas is concerned. If we have a mild winter, we'll get by all right. But if we don't, we'll have to have cutbacks in industry and other uses. So we have to look at alternate sources of energy in this respect. And we're looking now at probably more coal-fired generation as far as electricity is concerned. We're looking at geothermal and these other forms, but yet I think we have to rely basically on gas supply and electrical supplies as far as energy is concerned. The Canadians, of course, are very concerned about exporting their energy to this country, which we can't blame them, but I really think we have to do a better job in working with our friends to the north than we have as far as understanding their problems.
Well, the real problem that you're having on energy now is kind of a massive skepticism that most people tend to think, oh, they're crying wolf again, that the problem's not really there. You know, it's kind of interesting. A couple of years ago, before this was publicized, we did a study at the port that related to oil and pretty well identified that for the next 5 to 7 years, we're going to have some very dramatic problems, and The thing people don't recognize is that government tries to solve problems short-term because political figures have to do that, and they tend to bring about short-term solutions, but they're not permanent ones. And on energy, until we get replacement systems, until we get whole new methodologies at work in creating energy, you can't really solve the problem. You can postpone it, you can temper it, but you can't solve it. And so in the Pacific Northwest, natural gas has been the most critical. We had an electric problem because of a low water table and the fact that we weren't running as much water through the dams. All right, but these are just symptoms of a far greater problem, that we're energy short as a nation. The Alaskan pipeline, when it comes on, is simply going to meet the increased energy consumption that developed during the years the pipeline was in controversy. It's not a new shot in the arm. It doesn't help that much. And so in the Northwest and the rest of the country, we're going to have very dramatic problems because of scarcity of energy sources.
Yeah, it's been pointed out, by the time the pipeline is finished, we actually will not have even moved ahead. We will have actually retrogressed because the consumption will have so outrun the increased supply. Do you believe that people are really aware of the fact that we are in the midst of an energy crisis, especially an oil shortage?
I think most people believe that there's a problem, but most people don't consider it as a personal problem, therefore you don't get a lot of the solution, and I think very few people really believe that somehow or another they're not going to be able to do what they're accustomed to doing. I don't think many people believe they're going to have to give up the cars. They may not be able to obtain gas. I don't think many people believe they're going to be paying a dollar plus a gallon for gas. I don't think many people believe that we're probably going to have rationing. I personally think those things have to develop within the next 5 years.
Can I add something to that? This natural gas shortage is having an effect upon fertilizer supplies, and this has an effect upon food costs. We depend, of course, upon fertilizer out of Canada indirectly, to a very great extent, the Pacific Northwest. And some of this nitrogen in the last 2 years has tripled in price, and this year it is going to be quite high. The world price of nitrogen is very high. The construction of fertilizer plants is way behind schedule. It'll be another 2 years before, or 3 years before we catch up. So we can see energy having effect upon food costs in the immediate future.
Do you think people, everybody has his own story. Every time I talk to somebody about there being an energy crisis, an oil shortage, he will tell me some dramatic story of how the big oil company did thus and such. There was a fantastic fight in the media. I mean, newspapers would have huge double-page ads purchased by the oil companies to explain their point of view. Don't you think the private citizen is pretty much basically convinced that the so-called energy crisis was contrived?
Oh, I certainly do. And I think this goes back to this problem. You realize that since World War II, our per capita personal income in constant dollars has increased every quarter, with the exception of the last three quarters. It's the first time in our lives that we have seen a decline in real disposable personal income for three quarters. In other words, every generation has improved. Now we have many problems, and it's hard for us to realize that, after all, there are shortages in this world. There are shortages in aluminum, there are shortages in bananas, there's a shortage in nearly any raw material that you want to see, want to examine. And it's hard for us to realize that here in this great America that we may run into supply problems.
Well, more than that, a double theory is a very comfortable theory. Rather than say, this is a real problem and I'm going to have to personally sacrifice, it's far more comfortable to say that they're doing something wrong and therefore I have a short-lived problem. And we as a people have had things relatively comfortable for an elongated period of time, as Ed pointed out. And so it's very hard to accept that all of a sudden we may not have things as comfortable, that we're actually going to have to do without things. And so it's far easier to point our finger at somebody else and say it's their fault, and if they would just change that bad or evil or corrupt thing that they're doing, then we could go on and be comfortable the way we've always been. But, you know, whether the oil companies are right or wrong, and I can't judge what they've done and whether they're right or wrong, the energy shortage is real, and we as people are going to suffer. And until we accept that and try to develop the ways that are more convenient than the more onerous ways, we're going to be in very serious trouble, because if it gets to the ultimate, then we're going to have to do without things that really create tremendous scarcities, tremendous problems. It's not just lack of convenience.
Wait a minute there. What do you mean we're going to be in serious trouble? We are in serious trouble. No question about it.
I buy that, but we're not in serious trouble in the sense that you can't drive to work today or that you cannot provide the fuel to keep your home warm tonight. In other words, until we get that type of problem, most people don't perceive it as a personal problem.
And as long as, that condition of life exists, that you can continue to drive to work under those conditions, then the public at large is going to conceive of what you all as government leaders or business leaders have been talking about. They're going to conceive of it as some kind of a conspiratorial thing, that you're trying to engineer the crisis, that it really does not exist. There's a lack of confidence in the kind of leadership that the business community and the political community has offered to America today. So it is not so much a problem of the supply of resource, but a confidence in the leadership to guide us through this particular period of time we're in now. That what you say is, in fact, considered as truth. And where does the truth really lie? You can talk to somebody from the oil-producing states, a field worker who says, I can tell you with absolute positive knowledge of fact, that those oil fields in the United States are only operating at one-half, one-fourth, one-tenth of their potential capacity.
Rick, let me bring an example even closer. As director of the port, the energy crisis hit, I must have received 50 to 100 phone calls a day from people who were telling us that they had seen the ships tied off the mouth of the Columbia River that were full of oil, and that they were waiting there for the prices to go up to come in. It was hogwash, absolutely false. Yet these were people who were reasonably competent people, bright, sophisticated, who weren't telling us they'd heard it as a rumor. They were telling us they had seen them. And we knew for a fact they hadn't seen them. And so you have this whole spiral that takes place, and that's what you're talking about, the confidence problem, whether it's business
or
whatever.
I'd like to ask Frank to respond to this, because it gets into the hanged if you do and hanged if you don't problem for a politician. If the general public is going to believe something like that, it would be very, very unpopular for a politician in present office who would like to perpetuate that office, if not even improve it, to try to solve the problem before it occurs, instead of using hindsight or trying to solve the problem after it develops by, say, advocating increased taxation on fuel or higher prices for gasoline. How do you wrestle with that one, Frank, when you know that it'd be a very unpopular thing to the public?
Well, I've always said, Ted, it's hard to tell the truth in politics. I don't mean that politicians are generally liars. I think they're, by and large, a fine group of people. But the truth is not always attractive. And this is where you get into difficulty in public leadership. It's easier to gloss over something, and people receive this better than telling it as it is, actually. On this energy question, I think one example where we've created our own problem. Back east, say 10 years ago, we switched or put great pressures on power companies to switch from coal to oil. And now we are saying to the same utilities, you have to switch now from oil to coal. All right, this takes money, it's very costly, a very costly process. But I think we're realizing in this country today that our coal deposits are so vast that they have to be tapped and used. I was in Wyoming recently, for example. They have vast quantities of low sulfur coal, less than 1% sulfur content, very low ash content. This coal has to be used either in Wyoming or in the country, and it is being shipped to Chicago and Detroit. But this is an example now of dropping our dependence on oil and switching to coal. So I'm not as gloomy as some people on this question of energy. I think we have alternate uses as far as fuels are concerned. Now, if we don't use coal, we have to use nuclear or gas.
Frank,
the gas question
right.
is short.
You're right, but it takes time. And the thing that worries me is we all look at this country, which has technological greatness. And we can solve the problem. But we can't solve it in a timely fashion. You're not going to see the conversion to coal. You're not going to see the new sources of fuel. You're not going to see cars using something other than gasoline in the next 2, 3, 4 years. Technologically, you can't change a system that fast. And it's this gap where this country is really going to be hurt, because we have spent billions of dollars to develop a system that uses existing sources. You're going to have to spend billions of new dollars to use other sources, and you're talking 5, 10 years before that can come online. And during that intervening period, somebody's going to do without something, and that somebody is going to tend to be us.
But this is what people are not willing to do. You take the little nation of Israel, fuel is right, gasoline is about $1.70 a gallon. Europe has known the 50 cents per gallon of gasoline since back in the early 50s.
That's right.
A dollar a gallon is commonplace in many parts of the world. Why can't we, as American citizens, before a crisis occurs, tighten our belts and accept the fact that perhaps gasoline should cost a dollar a gallon? I'm probably going to get a lot of people that'll, you know, be screaming at home into their TV sets, you idiot, you know, and so on. But let's ask why this cannot be so. Why cannot we see this coming ahead of time? Think what it would mean to the national government, to state governments, in terms of gasoline taxes or luxury taxes, whatever we wish to call it, of simply recognizing the fact that we as Americans have been spoiled. We're just spoiled because we developed a Chamber of Commerce attitude that growth is a normal thing, that it's constant, it's always going to be here, and instead of seeing growth as even potentially cancerous, we're accustomed to it, we're used to it, and I'm not sure that we're ready to live without it. Care about the higher price.
Well, I think that we're expecting too much of government in this sense. Government has acted after the fact over a long, long period of time. At the present time, you're talking about, I think, what we're talking about is planning on the part of government. Government has never done this, basically. You see, we followed a policy in a very real sense since the Depression of the 1930s of looking at only one side of the coin, that is demand. The people that are in power in government today, basically, were born, raised, educated, read the books of the Depression of the 1930s. When the objective was to stimulate the economy and stimulate demand, we never thought in terms of solving a problem supply because we had no problems of supply. Now, in the last 3 or 4 years, we run into problems of supply, and the average politician at the federal level does not know what to do. Take, for example, we are going to outlaw depreciation allowances as far as the oil industry is concerned. You know, there might be some justification for maintaining that or in even increasing it. But this is an attitude. This is a short-run thing, you see. So what we're talking about is this. We're talking about government planning a way ahead of time. Yes, I'm one who believes that we should have a high gasoline tax, and we should not be depending upon the Arabs to the extent that we have been depending on them. Go back to the energy crisis that started in 1973. We probably should have not gone back to importing oil from the Arabs. We should have done something a little bit different, you see. But you're asking government to do something, one, that has never done before, that's never thought of. The only time it's ever done this has been in periods of war. We've never done this in periods of peace. Well, so government is not set up for it.
Well, I think we have to recognize that we are at war, but it's a different kind of war.
It's a different kind of war, yes.
And maybe make some of the sacrifices that are incumbent upon us.
Sure.
Yeah, but Ted, Frank gave you the answer to your question. If we let the economic marketplace work unfettered, you would not have the type of energy problem we have because the marketplace would control. You'd pay $1.75 for gas. A business would go to energy source based on price. Some businesses would go out of business. The problem you have is that we have developed a pattern in this country of the government moving in to try to artificially solve problems. And I'm not going to talk liberal or conservative. I think that's a fact. All right. As they do that, they have to do things that are attractive. And it gets back to what Frank was talking about. It's hard to be honest, because if you're honest, you may not be reelected. This isn't saying you're dishonest. All right, so you've got federal officials in Washington, D.C., who are trying to deal with this problem. If they put on a large gas tax, or if they said to the oil companies, charge what the marketplace will bear, you would have a revolution in this country, because a lot of people who are on limited incomes couldn't get to work. They couldn't get to the store to get their groceries. They'd feel the immediate impact. And that's what happens when the marketplace works by itself. Now, it tends to level out pretty rapidly, but because of our political structure, you can't let that happen. And as a result of that, you have problems that become worse rather than better. Price control was price and wage control was a perfect illustration of this. It didn't stop the inflationary spiral. It didn't solve any problems. It may have made a lot of them worse. And in fact, if we had had a mini recession a year and a half ago, we may not be in as bad a condition as we're in now. But because of this system of the government having to dabble to try to keep people happy, we tend to postpone the real problem, and it tends to get worse and worse, and then the crunch is on us.
Ted, I agree with Ed. I'm in government, and I see it every day. People are actually putting too many things at the front door of City Hall or the State House or the Congress. And I think we're guilty of this ourselves as government leaders. We talk too much about government solving these problems. We were talking earlier today about the meat situation. You remember when Nixon was pressured to put in meat controls, price controls on meat? Disaster hit this country. It hurt the farmers, it hurt the consumers, it cut back production. It was a disaster. the very same congressmen that are criticizing the president for not putting these controls on are now saying we should put controls after this disaster. Now they're saying, well, let's put them on again. You know, in Kansas City the other day, they talked about wage and price control. I was talking to Ed this morning about the fact of, I hear congressmen saying that we should lower the interest rates in this country. Well, how can we lower interest rates when the United States government is selling treasury notes at 9%, forcing people to take their monies out of savings and loans, buying government bonds? Why is the government selling bonds at 9%? That's the only way they can borrow money for the deficit.
Sure.
So unless we handle this deficit situation we're in, I don't think we're going to work our way out of this inflation question. But it's not popular to work our way out of a deficit. This is what Ford has to decide.
That's exactly right.
You're a banker.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Ford said just in the last few days that we're not really facing an economic crisis. But as I've said, you know, it's a big war if you're involved in it. I don't care how small a shooting war is, the people are getting shot at think that's the biggest war they've ever seen. So if I were a worker for Ford and I were laid off, I'm in the midst of an economic crisis. And there are millions of Americans whose jobs have been eroded away. And we know that there is definitely a downturn, a recession, possibly a deep recession. Unemployment is climbing above the 7%, maybe headed toward the 11 or even on up toward who knows percentage. So don't you think, getting back to this, that Mr. Ford himself is perhaps, I'm not saying he's not telling the truth, maybe that's the truth as he knows it or as he sees it or as he feels it is good for the country to tell it, but don't you feel that there is some political reasoning behind such a statement?
Well, I think Ford's at a fork in the road right now. Simon, his Treasury Secretary, has said, I think, publicly that if we keep on this deficit trail, that he'll get out as the Treasurer of the United States because of the fact that he doesn't think that the deficit, we can fund the deficit anymore. Now, Ford is in that dilemma. Now, I think really, if I was the president, I'd put more pressure on the Congress. Congressmen, you know, they come up with all these ideas, and they don't work, and then they say, well, you know, you didn't follow our intentions and so forth. I don't know what Ford's going to do, but he's at a fork in the road as far as his economic policy is concerned.
As a banker, Ed, how do we solve the economic problems today? Maybe you don't have all the answers. Let's ask a really good question.
You say
you're forced. Let's get back to one specific thing. You said, Frank, that people are forced to buy government bonds. Well, really, they're not. But it is so absolutely attractive, 9% over whatever the traditional percentage would be in the big SNL, yes, traditional bank savings accounts, that that's what they're doing. Why? Well, because people are trying to protect themselves. They're trying to make a fast buck. They're trying to hedge against inflation. We were talking earlier about the fact that the entire thing is a confidence game. You've got to have confidence in the government and confidence in the country and in each other. If you do, you're not going to have a Great Depression. If you lose that confidence and you think me and I, and you're scared half to death, if some kind of a panic starts, you're going to have it. Now, how do we avert that from an economist's point?
Well, I think you've got to go back and take a look at what has happened in the past. From 1960 to 1965, we got along very well in this country. We made a lot of economic progress. Beginning in 1965, we started running into inflation. And the reason why we did was because of the Great Society programs plus a middle-sized war. We expected too much of the economy. We decided to finance it by deficit financing, and we ran into inflation, and this has had a very bad effect on many sectors of the economy. Now, all during this period, for a number of years, we have been introducing restrictive influences, the Jones Act, for example, which has been suspended in this part of the country at the present time. But anyway, price maintenance laws and things of this sort, we've been quite restrictive. In the long run, I think we ought to move towards less restriction on the economy and go back to what Ed and the Commissioner both said here. We ought to go back to the price system, greater competition. Consequently, prices would come down, production would come up, demand would drop off, and things of this nature. This is a long-run thing. After all, you've been at it for a long, long time. Therefore, it's going to take a long time to get back. Now, I grant you there's other aspects of it than that, but basically this is what we need to do in this country.
What it's going to take, simply stated, though, Ted, and I personally don't think it's going to happen, it's going to take the people in this country recognizing that a little bit of hurt now is a lot better than a lot of hurt later. And let me give you a couple of illustrations of where we constantly look to Washington for solution. And I'm not against the federal government. There are many things they have to do. I'm on the board for a savings and loan that's reasonably good size. That savings and loan plead with the federal government to make money available so they can make mortgage loans because things were bad. What did government do? It put out bonds paying higher interest than we can pay, so we lost savings. They went to the federal government, then we had to borrow the money, pay more money to get it in there so we can do something, and at the same time, it's caused inflation to go like this. All right, or I'm a citizen. I want the federal government to cut spending, get rid of deficit spending, but I still want every service I've ever had plus 10 more services, and for crying out loud, don't cut spending in my state. So until we as citizens really change our expectation level from government, we're not going to solve the problem. The politician is not going to be able to come up with an answer that will work until the citizen says, I'm going to give you the capability to do it. And in this country right now, the citizens aren't saying that. The citizens are saying, we want more, not less. We want more spending in our area, we want more services, we want more in the way of rewards as human beings, and at the same time protect everything and keep it natural. It can't happen.
So what you're saying is we've got to get busy and change that attitude, change what the people think. That's an educational process.
In about 30 seconds, Ted, I'd like to say that I believe that what we've got here is a cornered situation. I think the public at large feels hostile. I think it feels cornered, trapped, and unable to do anything about the problem. It's saying that it is hurt and it wants desperately to do something about it. Yet, from the business community and the political community alike, both are saying, we'll take care of the problem for you if you'll let us exert more control, or we'll take care of the problem for you if you'll just let us go back to a free market exchange. Make up our minds and follow one path or the other, but do it with some degree of conviction. A return to the work ethic probably wouldn't help a great deal. There's probably more truth in a day's work than any other thing we know. That by itself, going back to a free market exchange, probably won't do it. I think we've got to approach it psychologically, and in a psychologically sound way, what are we going to do about it, Chance?
Well, I agree, but to me it's a question of philosophy. If you want the government to be a bigger part of your life, more rules and regulations, bigger bureaucracies, relax, because that's just the way we're going, locally, state, and national. I think if you don't want it to go that way, you have to get leadership to get you out of this mess. In other words, poor leaders, bad leaders get you into the mess. It's going to take good leaders to get you out of the mess. And I think leadership is a very big key here. And what is your philosophy? The question of your philosophical approach or decision, to me, is the key one. And it borders on what Rick has said.
Okay, I thank you very much, gentlemen. I wish we had another 5 hours. I think we're on the right track. I appreciate your comments. I hope all of you in the audience have appreciated this forum today. Thank you very much for taking your time. And I hope you'll write for the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, where we discuss straight from the shoulder issues just such as these and hopefully point out what some of the solutions are. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong. Goodbye, friends.
You have seen Garner Ted Armstrong. For literature offered on this program, send your request to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Canadian viewers write Box 44, Vancouver, BC. Or in the continental United States, you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.